Three times a week, The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast brings you the latest from technology, music, and the very best analysis of the games. Plus, they've got a community of friends, including Dominic Foxworth for Foxworth Fridays. That's The Right Time with Bomani Jones, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And Monday and Wednesday are also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday morning. Joining me from Austin, Texas is Kurt Goldsberry, the professor. Hello, Kurt.
What is up, Ryan? Good to see you today.
Because of a mistake that I, my own, you know, I flubbed something, which is known to happen. We're supposed to have Dave McMenamin on, but I totally flubbed it. And so it's just going to be me and you for this one.
I'm sorry, America, but we'll get Dave, through this together.
Dave will join us in spirit. So I wanted to talk about the two hottest teams in the NBA, although one of them is playing tonight, and I will almost certainly jinx them, as I've been known to do on this podcast. But that's right now the Phoenix Suns, who beat the Spurs in a tight one Sunday night to win their 10th consecutive game. 10 straight for the Phoenix Suns. And the other is the Atlanta Hawks, who are playing the Raptors on Monday night. The Hawks are undefeated, 7-0 since they traded Cam Reddish, and have gotten themselves back into position in the Eastern Conference, at least more in position in the Eastern Conference. And they're going for 8-0. They beat the Lakers on Sunday. They're going on a big fourth quarter comeback. They're going for 8-0 against the Raptors. And these two teams actually play each other later this week. So Kirk, I thought we would talk a little bit about the Suns. You know, they have been low-key spectacular all season. They have the best record in the league. Even though the Warriors have started playing better again after a little slump, the Warriors can't make up any ground on them. They've the Warriors have won 5 in a row and picked up no ground. The Suns are 40-9. They have a 3.5 game lead, you know, 4 games in the loss column on the Warriors for the best record. And they're way, way ahead of the Heat for the best record in the East. They got a 9-game lead over there. They continue to be awesome in the clutch. They did it again on Sunday. It was a tie game with 2 minutes to go, and they scored 8 straight points and put it away. What have you seen about this Suns team that continues to impress? For all the talk about all these other teams, they were in the finals last year, and they look like a strong candidate to get right back.
Yeah, the things I've seen, Brian, are the things you're seeing. Number one is consistency throughout the season. Even the Warriors, as impressive as they've been, they've had some bumps along the road. And then the other thing is just the diversity of excellence on the court with the Phoenix Suns. So you put those two things together, they've been rock solid throughout the calendar this year and rock solid on both ends of the court this year. You pointed it out. They're 40-9. That's a pretty impressive record. Also, yeah. Shout out to the 73-9 Warriors. I was thinking about that today because that right. 9 loss mark, it's remarkable. So all due respect to the Golden State Warriors, but I think the Phoenix Suns are the best team in the NBA. They have a top 5 offense and a top 5 defense. They haven't had a slump all year. They went 16-0 in November and just went 13-1 in January. 13-1 would be the best month for almost any team in any year. But that's their second best month. So, like I said, they've been here all year. They've been a problem. And credit to Chris Paul, Monty Williams, and James Jones. I think that's a very solid core leadership group that has this team just firing on all cylinders, Brian.
Yeah, James Jones last week got a contract extension. Mark Spears broke that story. And last night, Monty Williams became the Western, I guess it's Team LeBron. Shouldn't be, shouldn't say West. The Team LeBron coach. For the All-Star, and he gave a speech after the game. The Suns put it out on their Twitter feed. He spoke to the team after the game, and you know, I think it was Chris Paul basically brought it up. Hey, you know, congrats to coach for getting All-Star, and I think Chris Paul and Devin Booker will be there when it's all said and done. And Monty called out his whole staff. into the come into the huddle to talk about what they've done. And he really talked about trying to focus on the opportunity they have this season. He's like, look, I've been around the NBA for a long time as a player and coach. I know when you have an opportunity to do something, we have an opportunity to do something. So it was pretty good. And the thing about them is, you know, it's not like they've sailed along merrily. You know, Booker missed a bunch of games with a hamstring issue. Ayton has been out for the last couple of weeks with an ankle issue. Cameron Payne has been in and out with injuries all season. Crowder has missed four games of this 10 game. Jay Crowder has missed four games of this 10 game stretch. They have kept scrapping and finding ways to get things done. They've picked up a couple of guys during the season that have really helped them. We're going to talk about in a little bit, but when you're a top five offense and top five defensive team, you really have a lot going for you. And right, this team is just killer in the clutch because of Chris Paul and because of their versatile defensive players. Last night in this game, now the Spurs were down a couple of guys and it was a road game for them, but down the stretch of the game, the defensive maneuverability that the Suns had is just, it was a perfect illustration of how they got here. They have some defensive weapons, specifically Mikal Bridges, who like made a steal. I don't think he got credit for the steal, but and as I was watching, he got the steal and the block in the last couple of minutes, the last 2 minutes of the game. He's not going to be an all-star. He probably should be, but he's not going to be an all-star. He's going to be probably a first-team all-defensive player. Chris Paul will probably be a contender for a first-team all-defensive player. I don't know if Ayton will get that nature, but Ayton is a contender for all-defensive team. And Devin Booker has improved a lot defensively. When you look at this team, it's very easy to show the highlights of Booker hitting threes. And he hit two big threes that basically won them the game last night. That's definitely there. But their playmaking defensively has been awesome. And when you look at them, you start with their defense because that's where they've become so potent, I think.
Yeah, and it's in Monty's DNA too throughout his career as a member of some great defensive teams on his time in San Antonio. He knows that defense wins championships in this league. And you know, one of the things I think we don't do well enough in NBA media is look back at multiple year-over-year improvements and understand changes over time. That might not be as blatant as a winning streak like the Hawks are on right now, for instance. But the Phoenix Suns were not in good shape a few years ago. They had Devin Booker. Yeah, they drafted Ayton, but they were a mess. They've had so many coaches over the so many year period. Monty Williams and Chris Paul come in there, James Jones too, and just stabilize it. But you said it, the defense is great. And our colleague Jalen Rose has a term that I love to steal called basketball geometry. And when I think of the Suns on both sides of the court, Brian, God, they got great basketball players at all five of those, almost the traditional five positions in the sport. Their wings, like you said, with Bridges, Jay Crowder, really solid sort of 3-and-D type defenders. And then one of the things I think this team has done very well is in the interior. And I give credit to Monty and James for bringing in guys like JaVale McGee and, of course, Bismack Biyombo. And we brought up that Ayton, their rock in the interior, has improved greatly, but he missed time this year. And their ability to sort of substitute those Ayton minutes with guys like JaVale McGee and Bismack Biyombo coming in has really – they haven't missed a beat on defense. Usually, if you miss your center, your defense is questionable. Just ask the Utah Jazz, who have been the best defense in the league right for years. But Gobert goes out, and their defense suddenly is like a bottom 10 defense, and just more respect to Gobert. But this Phoenix team just keeps on humming on defense despite missing that centerpiece. And, of course, Chris is such a great on-floor leader on both ends of the court, Brian. I don't know where you stand on the Chris Paul for MVP discussion, but that's going to start getting some noise, too, if they remain this hot and this excellent on both sides of the court.
Yeah, the MVP race has gone from Steph Curry being outright leader to being an absolute toss-up. It could go a bunch of different directions. We got the two centers, obviously, and Jokic and Embiid battling again as they did last year. And then, you know, Chris Paul just putting up just amazing numbers. I mean, this guy, he was salary dumped.
He was the worst contract in the league.
he was salary dumped.
Yeah.
You know, and he led the Thunder to the playoffs. And now he's led the Suns to the finals, and he's going to get a real chance to win the title this year. So one of the things that good teams do is continue to develop players as the season goes along. And in the case of the Suns, I want to talk about this guy. He's a rookie, but he's not young. His name is Ish Wainwright. Okay. Ish Wainwright, I want to talk to you a little bit about him, because unless you're a Suns fan, you probably don't know much about him. Now, I was with the Suns in October, Kirk, and I was basically sitting there waiting for our Robert Sarver story, Baxter Holmes' Robert Sarver story to publish. And I was with them for days on end, and the story didn't come and didn't come and didn't come. I didn't know when the story was running. I didn't even know what was in the story. It was an investigative piece were chopped out of it. So I'm going to these Suns practices day after day, just, you know, talking to people and killing time. And so it's like the second or third week of the season, and the Suns sign this new two-way player, Ish Wainwright, and they bring him out to meet the media. And Kirk, I don't know if I've ever seen someone built like Ish Wainwright. His shoulders, it's like
Dwight Howard shoulders.
Dwight Howard, Phil Jackson, Rob Gronkowski, Ish Wainwright. These are the most impressive shoulders I've ever seen. Ish Wainwright's shoulders, you almost think he's wearing shoulder pads. And that's not an accident, because he was a football player, and not just an average football player. So he comes out, and you know, as soon as I met this guy, I had to know more about him. He was with the Bills. He played football and basketball at Baylor. Then actually played for the Bills. I don't think he ever made an active roster for a game. So I don't think that, you know, I don't know if you could say he played in the NFL, but he was on the Bills roster. And then he got cut, and so his football career ended. He had to have been a linebacker. He's 6'6". He's built like a linebacker. Maybe he was a lineman, but I'll bet he was damn impressive in football pads too. And he plays for Mike Schmitz on the Ugandan national team. Our Mike Schmitz,
yeah,
he's one of the assistant coaches of the Ugandan national team, and he plays for Uganda. And so he comes in as a two-way player. I guess he was with the Raptors in training camp, and they cut him. So so this is his rookie year. So they had an injury to DeAndre Ayton, and he's a 6'6 power forward, so he's undersized at power forward, but he's not undersized in the strength or the width department. The man is an absolute mountain. And last night in the game, and you know, again, this is one game, but he's been playing a lot for them. In fact, when you look at his net rating, he's the number one net rating guy for the Suns during this win streak, meaning they outscored the opponent by more points per 100 possessions when he's in there versus anybody else. Now, it's because he's playing with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, but my point is, it's having a very positive impact. They had him play center in the fourth quarter. They were down like, I don't know, maybe 8-12 points, something like that, to start the fourth quarter of this game against the Suns. They put him at center, and he plays small ball center down the stretch, and just the Spurs get their offense shut off. And late in the game, he's just pushing guys around. They had Jock Landale out there, and he's just their center. And he's just pushing him around. And so Wainwright's an interesting story. I don't know if this is just going to be a flash in the pan or whatever. He's a two-way guy. But this is how good teams get done. They found Ish Wainwright, you know, on the scrap heap. This is James Jones and his staff. They brought him in. And Monty Williams and his coaching staff, you know, I know one of their developmental coaches is Jarrett Jack. He probably wasn't working with Ish. I think Jarrett works with the guards, but I just, you know, I know Jarrett from covering him over the years. I always good to see him. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. They develop this guy, and when they need him, they put him in the game, and they start using him at center, and it helps them win the game. And, like, I know that it's really more about Mikhail. And that, by the way, they also signed Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, brilliant.
In the middle of the season, a guy who'd sort of washed out of the NBA, and he did so well as a hardship replacement player, they've signed him for the rest of the year. And, Kirk, this is what good teams do, right?
It's what good teams do.
Yeah. We've seen over the years, since two-way players have come in, teams have had to do a little bit, you know, more like football teams. We had to, like, maybe you sign a player in week five of the NFL that ends up being your starting cornerback in the playoff game. This is what the Suns are doing. They are developing during the season, and, you know, obviously Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Ayton and all those guys are going to be needed at the end, but this is some of the stuff I've been impressed with the Suns with.
Yeah, and you nailed it. And that's sort of my point about the year-over-year thing. It's the metamorphosis of the organization. This wasn't happening in Phoenix 5 years ago where they would get a free agent and it would be a disappointment almost all the time.
Right.
The teams that I associate with this concept of, man, they're just really good front offices, and they are like the old school Spurs, and they've been doing it for 20 years. Yep. But the Miami Heat, who you look at their roster, it's like, oh, where'd they find these guys? These undrafted players are all their rotation are killing. And Golden State, like Gary Payton this year, Andrew Wiggins is an all-star now. It's like, oh, every sort of transaction they make, these guys improve, promote their ability. You're exactly right, Brian. That is a sign. That is an indicator that you have a good organization with good bones. And that is sort of the under the surface remarkable transformation in Phoenix. As I said, credit to James Jones, credit to Monty Williams, and to Chris Paul, the leaders on the court, for helping find these guys like Ish Wainwright and getting them into the rotation and letting them thrive. You're exactly right. Wainwright set a career high, I think, last night in points and minutes, and helped them win a game.
He can shoot the three, and he can play defensive center. Yeah.
But that's exactly right. And I think that's a solid point about what's going on in Phoenix. It's just like they're sort of transitioning from a bad franchise to a good franchise in front of our eyes.
You mentioned Andrew Wiggins real quick. So obviously pretty remarkable that Wiggins was voted as an all-star starter. There's a bunch of different things that happened for it to take place. But listen, he's an all-star starter. You can't take it away from him. Two things I got to say real quick before we move on to the Hawks. One, I got to eat crow. I mean, I already kind of did, but I really hated that trade at D'Angelo. I didn't hate him. I just didn't like the D'Angelo Russell trade that they made. I didn't like that they gave up a first round pick to get D'Angelo Russell, which ended up becoming a second. It didn't convey, but then they get D'Angelo Russell, and then they take, I was like, man, they got to take on Wiggins. You know, the pick ended up being a number two pick, which was Wiseman. So we'll have to see about that. But I wasn't sure about the pick when it happened. And then they get Andrew Wiggins, who I thought was a toxic contract, a toxic asset in the deal. I was like, yeah, well, they're going to have to trade a pick to get rid of that contract. And instead the guy's an all-star. So you got to wonder if you're a Timberwolves fan, how are you feeling about the fact that Zach LaVine's going to be an all-star this year? Karl Towns all likely to be an all-star this year. And Andrew Wiggins is an all-star. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know if it would have worked when they were together, but it makes you wonder.
It does make you wonder. And I was just thinking like, yeah, the discourse around the NBA, whether you're in Minnesota or anyway, you brought up the point about Chris Paul's contract, which I think it's one of the sort of hilarious sort of blunders across NBA discourse in the last 5 years. And you didn't have it. There weren't many people defending the Chris Paul contract 5 years ago. And now nobody laughs at him. And now he's an MVP candidate and killing it. And Wiggins, same thing. Like the jury had found this man sort of guilty of being a bust, at least, you know, far and wide across the NBA landscape. And here he is starting the All-Star game. It to me, it goes back to the most underrated part of player development, which is the environment that these people find themselves in, the vibe, the coaching, the habits, the discipline. And if you put a great young player in one environment versus a great young player in a different environment, you're going to get a different result. And that's something I think that's happened in Minnesota and some of these other organizations that just can't get the most out of their lottery picks year after year. So I think that's an interesting one. And Zach LaVine is another great story in that regard. But ultimately, I think great organizations help make players the best versions of themselves, man.
Yeah, there's an entire concept that NBA executives talk about. They call it the secondary draft. Mm-hmm. I wish I could tell you who sort of coined it, because it was probably had been around a long time when I started hearing about it. But the idea is that, you know, you obviously draft the players the first time around, and then, you know, there's a certain percentage of them, it doesn't work out. And then these players become available in year two or year three on still on their rookie contracts. And some teams really look for those types of guys.
Malik Monk, Stanley Johnson, these types of guys. Maybe. And then you find this diamond in the rough. The first person I heard say that was Chris Grant. Maybe you know him from the Cleveland days, but I don't know if he came up with it, the secondary draft.
Yeah. Now he's with the Spurs now. The first guy who told me about it was Mark Workington, who was with the Blazers for a couple of decades, later won Executive of the Year as a GM of the Nuggets. Just the concept of going and getting a guy in year two or year three who's still very raw and sort of redrafting him. And you get him a lot cheaper. You know, if you had to trade up to get him when he was, you know, the 16th pick or the eighth pick, it's a lot harder. And there's a lot of success stories with that and a lot of failures. But like, for example, Cam Reddish would be a classic,
right?
Excuse me, secondary draft guy. Unfortunately, the Knicks aren't, you know, using the draft. They're kind of treating him like the first draft because they're still not playing him. I can't believe it's as simple as the Hawks traded Cam Reddish and all of a sudden everybody was singing Kumbaya and they're rolling. But you can't deny that they've been a completely different team since that trade. Now, the guy they got, Kevin Knox, he's played in a few of the games of their 7-game win streak. I think he's got a cup of coffee in a couple of the games. He would technically be a secondary draft guy too, although, you know, he's going to be a free agent. I'm not sure he's going to stick around. But the Hawks, they got Bogdan Bogdanovich back from injury shortly after Reddish got traded. That was obviously a factor. They had a bit of a favorable schedule. I mean, most of these games have been at home. The only road game they've played in this win streak is at Charlotte, which they won. But they beat the Bucks in there. They beat the Wolves, who've been playing very well. They beat the Celtics, who've been playing very well. And they came back against the Lakers. LeBron didn't play. He's got a knee injury. But the ultimate test will come against the Suns, play the Raptors first, but the Suns on Thursday. But if you look at what's happened here, and let me just check the standings right now. So at the start of this, the Hawks were in 12th in the East, which is obviously way below even the play-in line. And for a team that's in the luxury tax and spent spent $450 million or something on their free agents and own players on new contracts in the offseason, not what you wanted coming off the Eastern Conference. Well, they've won, like I said, 7 in a row. They had lost. They'd been on a losing streak before that. Let's see, how many in a row did they lose before that? They had lost five in a row. Yeah. So they were in 12th. They've gotten themselves up to 10th, and they're only a game out of 8th. They play the Raptors tonight, so the Raptors are in 8th as we speak. So a little bit of positioning battle there. But what's happened, as far as I can tell, Kirk, in this stretch, they've just started playing way better defense. They've been one of the top three or four offenses throughout the season. Trae Young's had another great year. He's an all-star starter. And rightly so. He's having arguably his best year, even with the changes in the foul rules. But defensively, I checked this at the start of this losing streak, they were 28th.
Yep.
And if you want to explain the difference between offense and defense in the NBA, regardless of where the rules and everything are, you know, when this winning streak started, they were 17 and 25. So being they were number two in offense and still 8 games under 500 because they were 28th in defense. Well, in the last 7 games, in that stretch of all the teams in the league's last 7 games, they are 6th in defense. And that can't all be Cam Reddish. You know, some of it is Onyeka Okwongwu has been back and playing good. He's a good defensive player. But what have you seen with the Hawks? They had a win streak back in November where we thought they stabilized stuff. But this seems to have turned their season around, this stretch.
Yeah. Well, I'll stick with my year-over-year DNA for this point. But, you know, they kind of did this last year to an extent. There was a coaching change involved, but they weren't good in the first big chunk of last season. And then we wake up and they're in the conference finals. So there is a little bit of that in the Hawks. Like maybe they just turn it on. Maybe Trae Young is the second half team. But the main point, you've already hit it. This defense was awful in the first half of the season. The only two worst defenses through 42 games were the Rockets and the Blazers. And those are really, really bad defenses. And they woke up on the morning of January 17th. Their season was half over. They were way under 500. They lost 5 straight, 9 of their last 11. And you pointed out the nerd herd around the NBA. We knew why. This was the defense. They couldn't stop anyone. Yeah. And I do think Okongwu is one of the key points here. This guy, I think that win streak, Brian, didn't just start January 17th against the defending champs in Atlanta when they beat the Milwaukee Bucks. I think it started at a precise moment in the fourth quarter. Giannis is backing down. The Hawks are clinging to a 1-point lead with 4 minutes left. Giannis, like we've seen a million times, rises up and looks like he's going to put a two-handed dunk in and take the lead. And what happens? Okongwu, like very few men in this league have done, stuffs Giannis at the rim, causes a jump ball, and it changes the game. The Hawks go on to win that game. For me, that's a very poetic moment because, as you mentioned, this is a defensive story with Atlanta right now. In that moment, you just stuffed the finals MVP at his favorite spot in a way that I can't think of many other people have done in a high-leverage situation. The numbers and the eye test back up that Okongwu is a difference maker for the Atlanta Hawks, especially on defense. Remember, he didn't play until January. There's a few games he got in there, but he really didn't play, Brian, until January. And when he's been on the floor, when Okongwu's been out there, and this is a second-year player, a lottery pick, he is a phenomenal athlete. They have a defensive rating 105.5 in the 400 minutes. That's a lot of minutes that he's been out there. I think we have to allow for the possibility this guy's a real difference maker for Atlanta. They have a tendency to be a second-half team. That said, they're still 500. They're still in the 10th spot, and it's crowded in the East these days. It is crowded. So if you're sitting at 10, you're a play-in team. Obviously, you're not in a great spot as a play-in team. They have to, if they want to make noise, continue to play good defense and climb up into those top 6 spots. And then that begs the question, Brian, can they do that? Can they keep this defense up? Because that's the big thing here. And who do they knock out if they continue at this pace out of those top 6 spots? Because as I said, it's pretty crowded in those 6 guaranteed spots in the East right now.
So Okongwu, yeah, we talked about on the podcast last week how packed the Eastern top 6 is, and it's also packed in the play-in zone. So Okongwu, so he came out of USC. He was very high on some teams' boards. Who knows for sure, but you know, the stories that go around the league are that the Warriors were really looking at him for number two, and that the Hornets like had decided we're taking Okongwu at number three, not LaMelo, but Okongwu.
High school teammates, though, right? Him and LaMelo. That's part of the origin story, I believe.
I can't keep track of the fourth
Ball brother in Chino Hills. I think he played with those guys in Los Angeles. So yeah, he comes from that group.
Yeah, I can't keep track of all of LaMelo's. I know he was in Cleveland for about 3 months or something at one point. So then it comes out that he's got a foot injury. I can't remember if it was a broken foot or something like that. And, you know, you're talking about a 6'8", 6'10" guy with a foot injury, and you're like, oh no. And so some teams backed off. I mean, he was, you know, what people loved about him was his defense, that he could guard four positions, maybe even five, depending. Yeah, he did go to Chino Hills. You're right. That he could have, he was like the prototypical new age NBA big man, you know, can guard everybody on the floor, switch, defend. Like, this is the type of guy that you want in this era. He's a center who can guard wings. And, you know, this foot injury, everybody was really scared of him. And so he slipped all the way down to six. And you could argue that, you know, that's why people keep, John Collins' name keeps popping up in trade rumors. Now, I don't know if you do it. You're so hot. I don't know. But, you know, it was popped up attached to Philly. It's popped up attached to Dallas, showing some interest in John Collins. And if you want to know why the Hawks might even entertain the concept of trading John Collins, it's because they've got this guy. I mean, now he's been, against the Lakers, he actually played center the entire way down the stretch. Capella was on the bench the entire fourth quarter. And they really liked that lineup. Okwongwu did a good job. Anthony Davis had a big three quarters against the Hawks on Sunday. And Okwongwu, I mean, I have to break down the film and have somebody like tell me, but I know that Anthony Davis only scored 5 points in the last quarter because Okwongwu, in part because he was on him. So they may see Okwongwu as their sort of 4-5 alongside Capella for the future, which is one of the reasons why they're willing to discuss
John Collins.
Discuss John Collins. I don't know. I'm making a bit of a guess there, but like, this guy's going to have to play because he is a part of their success. And I don't know what you would do in that situation, but you know, they just signed Collins to $125 million deal. They obviously believe in him, but when they drafted him, they thought that they may, you know, they extended Capella, they signed them both, but I think they got to see this guy as a starter, mid to long-term.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what he's doing on the court, I mean, it's not just that Giannis moment. I think in that big Minnesota win you talked about, he had five block shots. He can rebound. He can guard multiple positions. He's willing. He's talented. And as we've seen with Evan Mobley in Cleveland, like, young interior defenders that have versatility and skill like that can change the fate of your organization. And this organization's fate without him has been very limited because of its terrible defense, as we've established. You're not going anywhere as the 28th ranked defense in the NBA. That's one thing the stats era has taught us, right? Those teams don't go anywhere, Brian. Top 10 defenses? Yeah, they go places. Right. So what I see him with his ceiling is, okay, we know Trae Young is in charge of the offense, and we know that's going to be a top five offense because that's how talented he is. So that makes the team building conversation in Atlanta. Okay, how do we build a top 10 defense? And this guy could be a keystone of that process in a way that John Collins can't be. No disrespect to John Collins, he's a phenomenal player, but just as a defensive potential and the numbers back it up, this guy could be the foundation of making the Atlanta Hawks something they haven't been for the last few years, Brian, which is a two-way team. And just look at this win streak for proof of that.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not sure they trade Collins now. Maybe they need to see Okwongwu a little bit more to convince themselves of that.
Yeah.
But that is what this is leading toward, I believe, is his emergence. I have to say though, Trae Young has been great during this win streak. He shot the three-pointer really well. You know,
That one he hit in West on that Lakers game. Sorry to interrupt you. That he hit it just crunch time in Russell Westbrook's face, and he did his classic shivering motion. That's cold blooded. Yeah, he's a phenomenal scorer in the clutch too.
Yeah, you know, I talked to him last month about, you know, how he was handling the foul stuff, the changes in the fouls, and you know, I talked to him and Harden for the story. Harden seemed like he was in a much better place with it. From what I understand, Harden basically sent some stuff into the league and complained about, you know, he's like, you know, this, this, and this. And the league got back to him and said, you know what, James, you're right about that. And we're going to let our officials know. And I think whether or not they changed it or not, even though Harden's been chirping about it recently, I think Harden was like, well, at least they listened to me. And there was interaction. I think Trae Young was more accepting as opposed to it. But the point is, Trae is in this win streak is right back to where he was in terms of getting the line. You know, he was getting the line about 2.5 times less per game than he did a year ago, and about 3 times less than he did per game 2 years ago. Well, during this win streak, he's getting back to the line 8 times a game, right where he was last year. So it's definitely improved there. And so, you know, when he's able to have his, you know, he's hitting the three at over 40%, 42% in this win streak. He's hitting the long three. He's assisting. Let's see how many assists he's averaging, because I know he had.
He's 9.3 on the year. I don't know what it is on the street. He ranks third in the league, behind only Chris Paul and Harden in assists.
Yeah, he's averaging a 9 during the streak. So definitely getting it done. Hawks getting it done. So watch out there. And I mean, maybe they do. I mean, they obviously tried to trade for Simmons. We'll see if they do some other move. They've already made the one move with Reddish, who continues not to play. before we go, Kirk, you know, you used to work for the Spurs. How many seasons did you work for the Spurs?
3 full seasons, Brian.
In the Spurs front office. So I want you to know what you think of this. So right now, in international soccer, you know, we always talk about international soccer here. It's the transfer window. Right now, the teams are all dispersed across the world for their World Cup qualifiers. And so while they're dispersed, their teams make moves, and there's all kinds of trading going on between the teams in Europe right now. But one of the things that they do in European soccer, and I see it every morning right now when I wake up, I see all these things, all these reported, is they loan players for the rest of the season. So this is essentially the soccer trading deadline. And they sometimes loan the players and then eventually trade them, but they loan them. And sometimes it's to lesser division teams, or they'll loan them outside of the country. But sometimes they loan them to a team in their own, you know, division, in their own country. And I've wondered about this. Wouldn't it be great if the NBA could come up with a loan system for players? So that, like, you know, for example, like, The Rockets can't trade John Wall, but what if they could loan him to somebody for the rest of the season, that team pay his salary for the rest of the season, and then at the end of the season, if that worked out, then they could execute a trade, you know, or some team that was over the luxury tax but wasn't playing their 11th man could loan him to another team. I guess you'd be afraid that the guy would come back and beat you in the playoffs, but but like, I think this would be a fascinating thing for it to have in the NBA, and would change the dynamic of things, especially if you can get the player back. If you just say, I'm going to offload some money. I imagine if the Thunder could lend Lou Dort to somebody,
right,
and get like a first round pick for it or something, or, you know, a second round pick for it. Like, imagine how that could change things. I mean, this would be, I don't know. I mean, considering the NBA loves transactions, and considering there's all kinds of stuff teams do to save money and whatever. Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft. begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You think I'm crazy about this concept in the NBA? What do you think?
Well, I think European soccer proves that you're not. I think, you know, one of my favorite ideas is that European sports are capitalistic and American sports are socialistic. And we have a really hard set of rules to navigate in American sports that are designed to keep parity in place in leagues like the NBA. And, right. and one of the things that is hard right now, and I had a piece about this last year about team building in the NBA, is it's just easier for some teams than it is for others. If you're Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, it's harder to build a champion than if you're Rob Pelinka in Los Angeles.
Right.
So one of the things...
With all due respect to Magic Johnson, it wasn't like he went to LeBron and like gave him this incredible pitch about coming to play for the Lakers. I mean,
yeah,
they won the title because LeBron wanted to be in LA. And by the way, the Cavs won the title because LeBron wanted to be in Cleveland. Wasn't like they put on some great pitch either.
Right. And so the players make huge amounts of difference. So my question with this process, like Lu Dort's a great example. Lu Dort would help every contender right now. But would he go to
Milwaukee?
And
the Thunder would get him back. He'd get him back. Just go play up there.
Wouldn't Lou just say, hey, I'm going to go to Miami too. That sounds like a great place to spend my spring. And or would Lou go to a team like, the Denver Nuggets or a smaller market?
I think when it's a loan, I think some of the players contractually can turn it down in Europe.
Okay.
So like maybe Lu Dort says, yeah, I want to go play for Eric Spoelstra. I don't want to go play for Team X.
Yeah, I'm all into it. And I had one front office guy just talk about sort of zooming out on this context on this season. And one of the cool things that's happened this season that the NBA should sort of learn from is we've seen a lot of new opportunities for players because of a crappy COVID situation, Brian. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Like we're seeing Stanley Johnson, who I said earlier, like, this is great. Stanley's back in the league, and the league isn't an efficient marketplace necessarily. They had,
by the way, the Lakers did find Alex Caruso. It looks like the guy they found in Austin Reeves has a decent chance of being a real player going forward. Stanley Johnson, like Malik Monk, you mentioned, like the Lakers, I make a joke about LeBron, but you know, the Lakers have done a decent job with that as well.
No, I agree. And some of their hand was forced a little bit with Stanley. And right. And you look at Bismack Biyombo too. It's like, why were these guys, Lance Stevenson, wait, why weren't these guys playing last year? Right. And if it weren't for an awful pandemic that has just annoyed and destroyed a lot of things over the last 2 years, if it weren't for that, what would Lance be doing? What would Stanley be doing? What would Bismack be doing? So I think it's interesting that when we see, and this is sort of a theme of our conversation today, when we see players get a chance in a different environment, we can see the light come on in a different way.
Well, we talked about what happened with Chris Paul. Now, I'm not saying that John Wall would go somewhere
right.
and have the impact like in the middle of the season. But if the Rockets, like I just was reading the team that I follow is Tottenham Hotspur. They borrowed, you know, they agreed on a loan from a guy from a team in Italy. And if they like the guy at the end of the season, they can purchase his rights for 33 million pounds. Or maybe it was 33 million euros. I can't remember which.
Yeah.
They don't like the guy they can send him back. Now, they're probably going to buy him. That's neither here nor there. Imagine if a team could borrow John Wall for some sort of consideration, probably just mm-hmm. paying his salary.
Yeah.
And then John Wall all of a sudden looks great. And then at the end of the season, maybe they can work something out.
Yeah, there's a class of players, Brian, where I think you're hitting it. I think it's the John Walls, or not this year, but previous year's Kevin Love, where he's just sitting there
right.
on a bench.
Exactly.
Because his contract's a big number and his production might not match it. But geez, that's Kevin Love over there. Like, we've seen him win a title. Like, why isn't he even playing?
Guys sitting on the bench and not playing and making a lot of money. I obviously they're always going to have guys who are not playing, but giving those guys an opportunity to increase right. their own worth and continue to play. I can't see how that's not a win-win.
It's good for the product. The questions from the league and the owners have got to be, does this present an unfair advantage if the Lakers suddenly get John Wall or Kevin Love last year or whatever, and it plugs a big hole that they
and that's the
have.
Thing.
Yeah.
In England, like certain teams know that we're a farm system for the London clubs and they just accept it. And if they finish 11th or 8th or whatever, like, hey, we had a great year. It's kind of like the Formula One thing. It's kind of the same kind of mentality. But that's a longer conversation for a different time. Hey, Kirk, thanks for coming on to the Hoop Collective. Thanks to Jackson, our producer. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will keep an eye on the Hawks and keep an eye on the Suns and talk to you guys later this week.